The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you, Howard. I'll start with an apology. Unfortunately, I'm in an area where there's a bit of background noise, so I hope it won't be too disruptive to our chat this morning.
All right, I'm sure it'll be absolutely fine. A senior defense official has acknowledged that Israeli forces were active on a few different fronts during the last 24-hour period. During the 24-hour period over the weekend. Do they give any hints about these activities and where they were carried out?
Well, we have heard so much about various activities that have been going on that have been attributed to the IDF. And of course, we do know about the activities that took place over the northern Israeli border, the Hezbollah attack from the day before yesterday. But there wasn't any direct reference to the IDF's activities as such, other than to talk about what the IDF's priorities are right now. And I suppose when talking about the priorities, it also gives an indication as to what activities the IDF is currently directly involved in. And what the officials said is that the top priority remains to work towards preventing Iran from obtaining a nuclear capability. I mean, that is no surprise to anybody. That's something that's been on the agenda already for some time. The Prime Minister has been very vocal in talking about it on the international stage. So that clearly comes as no surprise. But it is a reinforcement of the fact that the IDF and the security services are operating every day in order to ensure that Iran finds it as difficult as possible to obtain that nuclear capability. And so even though we don't know exactly what those activities have involved over that 24-hour period that was referred to over the weekend, we can speculate, because there were some unrelated reports of things that have happened in Iran, things that have happened in Iraq, attacks that have taken place, explosions that have taken place. And even though, as I say, the IDF has not taken direct responsibility for it, there is certainly an indirect reference to it. Interestingly, the defense official then went on to say that the IDF's second highest priority is to prevent Hezbollah from obtaining precision-guided missiles. And so that is a direct reference to activities that have been going on in Lebanon and, of course, the consequential activities that took place on the northern border with Israel between Hezbollah the day before yesterday. And it's interesting that this is now the second highest priority. We have heard quite a lot of discussion about Hezbollah's missile capabilities and the fact that Iran is helping Hezbollah to upgrade the missile capability to give Hezbollah the precision-guided missile that will make things a lot more dangerous from an Israeli point of view, because it'll give all of those missiles that are within Hezbollah's arsenal a much, much greater capability than is the case today. So that is the second highest priority. The third highest priority, according to this official, is to prevent Iran from becoming entrenched in other locations, particularly Syria, particularly areas of Yemen and other locations where Iran is currently operating, including Iraq. So that is the third highest priority. And once again, even though the official didn't talk about IDF activities that specifically were intended to work against allowing Iran to entrench itself, we've heard so many reports about mysterious attacks and events that have taken place in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Syria, in other places against Iranian targets, that one has to understand how we link these all together. And I think that this official is trying to say, without actually openly acknowledging, that Israel has somehow been involved in all of these activities that are unattributed on, that are not being acknowledged formally by the IDF. So it was an interesting analysis of where the IDF's current priorities lie. And the fact that the work against the Hezbollah precision-guided missiles is only apparently something which has been promoted in its priority some 3 months ago. So even though we had the idea that the whole issue of precision-guided missiles in the hands of Hezbollah has been something that has been a high priority for some time. This official went on to say that only 3 months ago, it was really promoted to the second highest priority. So I think some interesting analysis, and of course, we then had Hassan Nasrallah coming out saying that, you know, the red lines have been crossed and that there are no further boundaries in terms of what Hezbollah might do to respond to Israel. And I think that this ties into what we were talking about yesterday when we said that all of this, the setup that Israel created in order to give Hezbollah the impression that their attack had succeeded the day before yesterday may well incite Hezbollah to carry out further attacks in order just to reclaim some of the high ground and in order particularly to show their population and to show the people who are supporters of Hezbollah that Hezbollah are very effective. Nasrallah has been coming out, you know, saying how afraid the IDF has been as a result of Hezbollah's threats and how people on the northern border of Israel have been very nervous and that he's held Israel almost hostage by making these threats and causing the IDF to be in a higher state of preparedness. I'm not sure that, you know, his assessment is necessarily true, but of course he has to present it as such in order at least to give Hezbollah supporters the feeling that their actions are somehow effective.
Unbelievable. And of course, the story will continue for some time. This is another story that doesn't seem to ever go away. The International Criminal Court has issued a decision on the Mavi Marmara case where Israel was accused of war crimes. The court's recent ruling keeps the possibility of a prosecution in this case still alive. What decision now is handed down in the court? Why are we still talking about this?
Wow, this has been going on for ages. I mean, let's remind ourselves that the Mavi Marmara incident took place in 2010. So 9 years have passed since the incident. It has been going through the International Criminal Court since, I think, 2014. Interestingly, it was the Comoro Islands who actually filed the case in the International Criminal Court on behalf of the Turkish organization, which it was allied with as an official member of the International Criminal Court. And it's been to the appeal bench of the International Criminal Court now for the third time. And what's very interesting about all of these appeals and the hearings that have taken place at the International Criminal Court is, of course, the fact that the accusation is of war crimes. And initially, the prosecutor, who is quite well known and who was kind of considered to be pretty anti-Israeli in her stance, but ultimately, the way that she has gone about things has been almost pro-Israeli. This is, of course, Fatou Bensouda, who has been tasked with taking this court, a case and prosecuting it. So initially she decided that because there were only, and I say only in inverted commas, there were only 10 people killed, there were 10 Turkish activists killed in that particular incident, that she was finding because of the relatively low number of people that were killed in a case that involves war crimes, she felt that war crimes couldn't really be pinned upon this particular incident because it didn't really seem like something that was a kind of a war crime. It was just an incident that took place in particular circumstances, but wasn't tantamount to being war crimes as would necessarily be prosecuted by an International Court of Justice. And then this was taken to the appeal bench. And the appeal bench decided on a 2-1 split that they should hand it back to her to reinvestigate some new information. So that happened not once, but twice already before the current ruling. This is now the third time that it's gone to the appeal. And the appeal chamber decided in quite a similar way to before, which is that they decided that they would refer it back to the prosecutor. Now, apparently, as a result of the current ruling, the prosecutor's options of deferring this case are quite they're more limited than they were before. She now has to really look at information much more aggressively, and she would have to take a very, I think, quite brave view as a result of this current appeal ruling. to defer the case one more time, even though we really get the impression that she is inclined to defer the case and that she really doesn't see a case to be answered here against war crimes. Not only that there were not that many people involved, but also she found in one of her rulings that there wasn't actually a plan, that there wasn't actually an intention to go out and kill or harm those people, but that it happened as a result of a particular set of circumstances within that incident. And so as far as she's concerned, when looking at the legal side of what constitutes a war crime, she decided that this is really not a war crime. As it turns out, the appeal bench has decided once again that she needs to re-examine it, also on a split decision 2-1. And so she will be forced to reconsider this case again. I hope that this will be really the end of the road, because, you know, I think that in all probability, I think that people would be almost find it very, very difficult to really accuse the Israeli government of war crimes in that incident. It was an incident. It was very unfortunate. The Israeli government have issued an apology for what happened in that particular incident. But I think to take it to war crimes is a little extreme.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely crazy story. And we don't have a lot of time. I have mentioned this to our listeners. I think it's an incredible story, but I'd love your take on it. Is this Iranian judoka champion who refused to compete against Israeli opponent has now sought asylum in Germany. Incredible.
This is really an incredible story, and I think it even goes further than that, because Israel has indicated that it would actually like to invite him to come and participate in a judo competition in Israel. And I think that this is kind of an indication of exactly what's going on here. This this judo participant, Iranian judo participant, was actually instructed by the Iranian regime to throw a match. He didn't actually refuse to participate against Sagi Mukhi in the end. But what he did was he threw the match against his Belgian opponent so that the Belgian would be the one to go forward to fight against Sagi Mukhi, and therefore that he would have to avoid the embarrassment of saying, I'm not going to participate in that particular fight. And that's exactly what happened. But since then, so many different things have happened. First of all, Sagi Mukhi has come out being very complimentary about the individual, saying what a fantastic person he is and what a great judoka he is, clearly giving the indication that this was all being done, not by him personally, but of course by the Iranian regime. Now, on his way back from that competition in Japan, he was in Germany. He sought asylum in Germany, and it seems as if the reason for him seeking asylum there is because he's genuinely afraid of what awaits him and his family when he returns to Iran. And I can't understand why he would be afraid, because it seems as if though he has really done whatever the Iranian regime demanded of him. And yet, in addition to not only throwing that fight, it seems like he's actually come out publicly congratulating Sagi Mukhi on his on his victory and on his gold medal. And perhaps that is the source for why the Iranian regime would potentially like to pursue him and his family. So he seems to be genuinely afraid about returning to Iran. The International Judo Federation has already indicated that they would like him to compete in the Olympic Games under what they call a refugee team, which is a team of people who have no state for one reason or another. And he's already been given the go-ahead to compete in that team. But I think that this is a very, very sad state of affairs when a person who wants to just compete and to take on his sport and to further himself in his sport is being forced to take such a strong political view, and that his life becomes endangered and the lives of his family members become endangered as a result of him just trying to pursue his sport. I think this is very sad.
Absolutely.
And I think that this is a real indication of Iran and what Iran is currently about.
Absolutely right. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, this is where we leave it. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Colin S. says, please tell Louis that Sharapova is Russian, not Serbian. And tell Howard she's not Siberian. I don't know, this is from a listenership who's got no idea where Alberton is. Rich, eh? Coming from them. Rich.
Coming from a person who thought that Ibiza's in Greece.
Exactly. Thank you for pointing that out, Zanati. But we haven't held that against you. We have let that go completely. It is 8 o'clock.